started. Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. It is Stoptember. We're all here except for Sean, but Sean will be here eventually.
He'll be here shortly.
And we watched Alex pick Max and Mary from, I think, 2009.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just going to say it, a movie I would never in a million years have watched on my own.
Same. Show. And I'm really glad.
It is a triumph of a movie. Like, this movie's something else. So we will get into it.
The thing is, like, I would have just seen this and skipped right by it. There's no reason I would have watched
No chance movie. In hell.
And I don't know. Like, this is one of those, I mean, I'm going to spoil how I feel about the movie, but this is one of those, like, Movie the Podcast movies that I'm so glad that we got to watch. I'm so glad Alec picked it because, like, what a treat. Like, it's not like, you know, it's very sad. It's very, like, melancholic.
It's bittersweet.
Bittersweet. Yeah, that's the great word. But, like, again, I would have never, ever watched this.
Not a chance in hell.
And I'm really happy to have seen it. Also, like, it's funny to go from Porco Rosso last week, where you have a celebrity voice in Michael Keaton, where he just, like, didn't give a fuck, to, like, having two celebrity actors in this, Toni Collette and Philip Seymour Hoffman, RIP. And you could tell they really cared. Like,
can I say something about that? Like,
sure.
They were so good at it, I didn't know it was them. And I mean that as a compliment.
I mean, I only knew because of the, you know, because of the.
No, I mean, I looked it up afterwards, but like during, I was like, I don't know who's doing, like, whoever did that, was like, this voice works amazing. But I found it was Toni Collette and Philip Seymour Hoffman. I was like, blown away, because it was awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get into it. This guy made the, I thought this director made that, what's that snail movie?
With Jenny Slate?
No, he made a movie called Memoir of a Snail. It's not the same thing. But
like Memoirs of a Geisha?
Maybe. But anyway, and like Og said, Sean will join us momentarily. He's finishing up sucking his dad's dick.
Classic.
So what did y'all watch this week?
I watched two things.
Two things? Two
things. Down from my normal eight. But
hey, man,
it's a slow week.
Cutting back.
I watched Steve Martin, Queen Latifah romp, Bringing Down the House.
Oh my God, look at that.
What's the plot conceit of Bringing Down the House?
Bringing Down the House is a hilarious love story where Steve Martin, it's the dawn of internet dating. Like, this is like not like apps, like internet dating.
Like chat rooms.
Yes. And like Steve Martin is chatting with a woman who he thinks is a lawyer. And the picture she sends is a beautiful white woman who's like in the middle of an interview. And she says, this is me. She gets out and she's actually a prisoner in jail. She gets out of jail and shows up at his house because they've been planning this night together, and he thinks he's just meeting her for the first time. She actually was in that same picture that she sent, but she's in the background getting arrested and put into a cop car, which is kind of funny. But they don't click because Steve Martin can't be dating a criminal. But hijinks ensue, and she becomes a part of the family and helps the kids with their homework and teaches him how to be more black, and he teaches her how to be more white.
That's kind of like the relationship Sean and I have.
Who teaches who what?
Sean teaches me how to be more black, and I teach him how to be more white.
I don't want to stop rolling his R's. It wasn't that bad. It was like the two of them have really good chemistry, and both bring a ton of charisma to the screen. So like, whereas the movie like this could have been like a two, There's probably like a 7. Like, it wasn't like the best thing I've ever seen, but it was 100% watchable, and it had moments where I was legitimately laughing out loud. Like, I love Steve Martin. I love Queen Latifah. Who else is it? Eugene Levy is in it as like Steve Martin's partner at the law firm, or like his buddy who works at the law firm, and he falls head over heels for Queen Latifah, and he's like spouting out like rap lyrics and stuff, trying to get her to fall in love with him. And he's really funny in it. But it's a decent movie. I'd recommend giving it a watch if you want to turn your brain off for a little bit and watch something. There's not enough.
Lord knows I do.
I mean, I guess there are still a lot of movies like that to come out, but I have no interest in seeing new movies like that. I just want to see old ones with comforting people from my childhood. I don't need to see turn your brain off movies. I can just watch
Like you're not wrong though. I feel like there really isn't a lot of movies like I feel like everything is too important now. Like, I don't feel like there's like the fucking like cheaper like throwaway movies like there used to be. I feel like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just not paying attention to them, but I just feel like at least most things that's come out, everything seems to be like a big budget thing. And I don't know. It doesn't seem like you have, like, I don't know. I saw I got nostalgic yesterday because I saw a TikTok for fucking, Superbad. You know, and I love that movie. And I remember like getting excited about that movie, and I still love that movie. I think it holds up. But like, where's our current Superbad? You know, I mean, I don't know. We've talked about this 1,000 times. And no, it's not because everybody's woke or whatever. I just feel like every movie just costs too much money, so they don't want to take risks anymore. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. Like, but then you see some of the shit that does get made. You're like, come on. You could have made five mediocre comedies that people will watch on repeat for years. Instead, you swung for this piece of shit and had weekly bunted out first. Like,
yeah, I don't understand it. I really don't. It's just one of those things where it's just like, again, like we've talked about this 1,000 times. But like, if it's not some fucking existing IP, they just don't want to make a movie about it. And it's like, you know, it kind of sucks. Like, I don't know. It's depressing. It's not to say that shit, their movies don't get made, but it doesn't seem like to the consistency in which they used to get made. I guess I'll put it that way. No, and again, this is completely vibes based without any real actual research.
I feel like most movies used to be like this.
Yes.
Like most movies were just meh. Yeah. You throw a couple of stars in it, hope for the best. Now there's too much like small budget and mini budget. They can't make any mistakes, so they don't take any chances. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me talk about absolute banger that I watched for the first time.
Ooh.
Absolute Romy banger. And Michelle's high school reunion.
Oh, that's it.
Post-its.
That's like right in that same wheelhouse, though, I would say. Like,
that's what
we're talking about.
I think Romy and Michelle has like a devout fan base.
Oh, yeah. I'd agree with that.
Unlike Bringing Down the House. Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion fucking slaps. It's a lot of fun. Like, I'd never seen it before.
It's good.
But I loved it. Like, it's so funny. And it's so fucking weird at points. Like, there's like legit, like almost, and I was high, so the timing might be off, but it felt like there was like a half hour scene where you live out, Lisa Kudrow's life into the future. And then it just cuts back to the present. It's like,
oh yeah.
Oh, that was all just a dream. You're like, that should have been like a 2-minute joke, and they went like a half hour with it. They just kept going.
Yeah.
Which like is awesome and hilarious. That movie fucking slaps though.
Agreed.
The soundtrack is absolutely phenomenal. And
are you talking about Romy and Michelle?
Yep.
Hell yeah.
And I love that Alan Cumming is in it. Kind of barely. But then led me down a coming hole, and I read that he owns a club in New York, Club Cumming. And every Saturday And I looked it up. I went to the website. They still do this every Saturday from 4 to 8. They have Romy and Michelle's tea party where they just play music from the movie. People dress up like from the movie and shit from like 4 to 8 every Saturday afternoon. People just hang out and watch Romy and Michelle and dance the songs and shit like that, which is kind of neat.
Is that like a big club?
That's where it's just, yeah,
it is.
Yeah, definitely.
Even if it's not a cult movie, it fucking slaps hard.
Hell yeah.
And I couldn't get over the fact that, like, Romy's accent just sounds like half the people I work with from Dundalk. I guess it was supposed to be, like, a Midwest accent, but the O's, the way she hits the O's on everything.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I watched, Cox.
I watched a whole mess of stuff, but I'm just a lot of it's repeats. So I'm not gonna get into how many Marvel movies I watched and like all the other. I'm gonna talk about two things.
Guardians 3 again yet?
No, I still need to watch that. I'm waiting to watch that with Vance because he just finished Endgame, so he's seen up until where Guardians 3 will now make sense. So I went and revisited my favorite.
So he's seen Endgame and Infinity War now. Did he just look up and glance over at you and be like, Dad, but this movie has no stakes?
It's literally he was watching Infinity War Saturday morning.
How old is Vance? 9?
10. 10. Just 10. Turned 10.
I really don't know how a 10-year-old reacts to the Infinity War.
He got through it because he knew there was more coming. So here's the deal. Vance, like myself, suffers, I think, from anxiety. I don't even think he does. And he looks me dead in the eyes and goes, Dad, what happens? I need to know the spoilers so I don't have to worry about it and I can enjoy the movie. And I said, listen, at the end of this, they lose. They snap, a bunch of them go away, but then they're all going to come back, or most of them will come back later. He's like, thank you. And then he can enjoy the movie. So he got over it. He did say that he reminded me that the steak thing was happening. He was like, Dad, I don't see what steaks are. I said, see, same thing. So he's been watching all those. We're going to watch Guardians 3. We've watched and listened to so much. Thank God the Awesome Mixes rule, because that's all we've been listening to lately. He actually requested, I'm going off a tangent, but you guys asked for this. We went to their elementary school back to school picnic and they had a DJ, and he requested from the DJ for them to play Come and Get Your Love from the Awesome Mix 1.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He loves that
Very
song.
Cool.
Anyway, so I went down a John Carpenter hole, and I got two things to say. One, I rewatched In the Mouth of Madness yet again. That movie fucking great movie. Rules.
Underrated.
Underrated Carpenter, John Carpenter.
In my opinion.
And follow-up, and this is maybe a hot take. Actually, maybe it's not that controversial. Mm-mm. I rewatched the original Halloween. That is the best slasher movie.
How is that a hot take?
I don't know, because I think up
until this point, I was worried you were about to say, oh, that movie fucking sucks.
I think I've always considered it like below Nightmare and below the original Friday the 13th. It is far superior.
Also,
that movie
predates those. I mean, that was like one of the original. Texas Chainsaw is first, then Halloween, then I think, then it goes Friday the 13th, then Nightmare, if I'm not mistaken. But I mean, Halloween is fucking amazing. Like, it's so good.
Halloween is so good, and it's like, I don't think I truly appreciated ever how good it is, especially compared to some of those other ones. And then it's like if you put it in that, like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw, Halloween, and I'm gonna throw Hellraiser in there because I like Hellraiser. Sure. Of those five, I'm putting Halloween in the one slot, Texas Chainsaw in the two, Hellraiser in the three.
Wow.
And then actually Nightmare gets the five slot. I think I like Friday the 13th better, like the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
You like Friday the 13th part one better than Nightmare on Elm Street part one?
I think so, but I might need to revisit those two.
That's insane. No, go back and watch Go back and watch, because you're thinking of fucking Jason. Watch Friday the 13th.
You're right, because it is his mom.
It sucks. Like, I'm sorry. I don't like that movie at all. Out of the early ones, part two is my favorite. That's with Sackhead Jason. But that one's when it turns into a proper slasher.
I will always love three, because it's so over the top and corny.
Three's great. I mean, I like those movies, but like that, I think it's absurd to say that Nightmare that Friday the 13th Part 1 is better than the Nightmare. That to me is,
well, there we go.
Sacrilege.
Regardless, going back to where we started with this, Halloween is so good.
Oh my God.
And it's so well made.
Oh my God.
And it starts off as it's just from coast to coast, like butter and toast. The thing's just fucking kicking it. And they managed to just hire the cutest 70s actresses with the nicest cans. It was a great movie. And then just as a tangent, I guess I signed up and keep forgetting to cancel Paramount Plus on Prime. So same. I've got access to all of the Comedy Central stuff. I rewatched Review.
Oh my God. Review is so good. Yeah.
I don't know. Like the show Review as a premise.
I feel like you and I watched like the majority of that first season together in your basement.
But I'm deep into the second season again, and like what I forgot about Review was, as a premise, the show is hilarious. And for those of you who have not seen Review, Review is Andrew Daly reviewing. He's a reviewer and he reviews life experiences like stealing or getting a divorce or eating 15 pancakes.
Being at an orgy.
Yeah, and
isn't one of them rehab?
One of them is becoming addicted, heroin. And then he gets addicted to cocaine on purpose, and then has to go to rehab.
It's the best.
But what's like the show on its face is brilliant, like it's hilarious concept, right? But I don't know. I think what makes it even funnier is that it is established lore. Like it is consistent. Like his car that gets destroyed in one episode is still destroyed through the rest of the season. Like the one thing was like, hey, what's it like to get a divorce? And he divorces his wife and like from his loving relation. And then the repercussions of that is continuing from the first season into the second season. Like it's just the fact that they've hold on to all of this stuff and built just watching the show destroy his life.
His name is Andrew Daly.
Andrew
name,
Daly,
right?
And
that's the voice of Kermopolis Michael.
Also true,
but his brother is the guy from Kroll Show, John Daly.
John Daly, from
not that John
Dix.
Daly, right? Yeah.
He's Peter Paparazzo from Ghost Bouncers.
Yeah. The Review is like criminally underrated. That is one of the best Comedy Central shows ever.
It's so good. It's up there with it's better than Nathan For You, and I love Nathan For You.
Oh,
is it better than Nathan For You?
It is better than Nathan For You. I will put a stamp. And I love Nathan. This is not a slight on Nathan For You.
And I love Nathan For You.
I love John Benjamin Has a Van. It's better than John Benjamin Has a Van.
Yeah, it's better than John Benjamin Has a Van. But that,
those three shows are super underrated, and it's better than it's the best of those three. So if you've not watched Review, and if you're like me and you signed up for Paramount Plus and you continue to forget to cancel it, please go watch Review. Sean.
Also, you just watched Beavis and Butthead over and over.
Also true.
I didn't realize that all that was on Paramount Plus. Shit, I gotta check out Paramount Plus.
They got all the Comedy Central stuff. Sean?
Sean.
I didn't watch shit. Go on.
All right, then. I guess TJ, then, I guess. I don't know. I guess if you cede your time or whatever.
Yeah, I concede my time to the gentleman at the bottom of the screen. I watched one thing. I watched the new Jeremy Saulnier film, Rebel Ridge, on Netflix.
Tell me something good.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Is it a Netflix original?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he must have signed a deal with Netflix, because remember his last movie was Netflix too, Hold the Dark.
But you didn't care for that, right?
Did not like it at all, and I was worried.
It wasn't good.
Yeah, Sean and I want to say Sean and I reviewed it.
We watched it together. Yeah, I don't know if we
didn't we review it? I think we did a whole episode.
I think we did.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. I was worried, whenever a director makes a bad one, you're like, uh-oh, is the next one going to be bad? Because I love Jeremy Saulnier. We've been over his movies 1,000 times. I feel like we bring up Green Room and as well, specifically Green Room, but like Green Room and Blue Ruin and Murder Party. I love his films.
And you live long enough to be Darren Aronofsky sometimes.
Yeah, for real. But anyway, Rebel Ridge is great. It's funny because the lead actor I was not familiar with, and I looked up his filmography, and he's in Old. Remember Old? He's mid-sized sedan. That's who that actor is. I was like, oh my god. He's great in this movie, though. This movie also is very in a very Ryan Johnson way. It subverts your expectations because the trailer makes it seem like this is a Rambo movie. Like we all joked about it in the analog. But it looked like Rambo. Like he's like an ex-military special forces guy. He's going into this small town. The cops are harassing him, and then he's got to fuck up the cops. But in reality, this movie, I mean, he does do that, but like this is a more grounded, realistic. I mean, it's semi-realistic, where like he can't just go murder like a precinct full of cops. He has to kind of outsmart them. And while there is like action and like some cool set pieces and a little bit of violence, it's not really about that. It's about like kind of this like kind of cat and mouse game between him and the cops. I thought it was really, really good. I really liked all the
performances. So it is kind of like First Blood then.
It is, but like First Blood where he's not just slaughtering everybody. Didn't we watch it?
He doesn't actually kill anybody in First Blood.
Yeah, I always feel like he does, but yeah.
Doesn't somebody in First Blood like get accidentally killed by like themselves if they blame it on him?
Yeah. And then one guy gets the spike logged to the dick, but mainly he doesn't really kill anybody or hurt anybody. I guess.
But it's more I guess the thing is like it's less about him versus the cops and more about the cops like kind of getting the middle of like a bigger thing and the cops are like super corrupt and it's more about the history of the town. And I don't know, I thought it was really, really well done. I thought all the performances were really well done. Jeremy Saulnier, like usual, like has a very good eye. Like it's shot very, very well. My only complaint is it's a little long. Much like Sex with Alec, I felt its length about halfway through. It's still really good. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really strong movie. I made the joke to Sean that Don Johnson only plays white supremacists now because like he was in Django. He was a Klans member. He's in Watchmen. He's a Klans member. And this, he's a white supremacist cop. It's like his whole like
career. So he's a cop.
But like his
I'm sorry, are you ready to hit the we're so back button for Jeremy Saulnier?
Oh, 100%. Now I'm like, I can't wait till he makes something else. I thought it was great. I thought it was really, really good. And it came out of nowhere. Like when I saw the trailer for this, I feel like we shared the trailer for this like a long time ago. I had no idea that Jeremy Saulnier was involved. And it wasn't until like, I don't know, one of the film groups that I'm in on Facebook was like, oh, the new Jeremy Saulnier movie's coming out. I'm like, what? And he's back, man. It was excellent. I think everybody here would like it. I thought it was really, really good. I can't recommend it enough. I guess I did watch two things, but I don't really want to talk about it all that much. I watched Godfather 3 again.
Ugh.
It's just as bad as I remember.
Joey!
Is it Coppola's fault?
No, she gets... Well, from a standpoint where her involvement, like, Coppola, like, rewrote the script around her, it's her fault in that respect, but not really. Like, I don't really find her performance that bad. It's just the story sucks. And, like, Andy Garcia's really good in a performance that's, like, wasted in not a very good movie. But like I thought he was like really good in the movie.
That's Andy Garcia's whole career.
Well, the thing is that's frustrating about The Godfather, right? Is that or The Godfather Part 3 is that like I think the I'm going out on a limb, right? Godfather 1 and 2 are considered some of the greatest movies ever made. But there's a like visual tone in those movies that is just amazing. Like you can see it in your head. Like it's that kind of orangish soft light. It reminds you of like a dingy Italian basement. It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, and it reminds me of God's basement.
The thing is, Godfather 3 doesn't look like that, like, at all. It looks like a totally different movie. It doesn't feel, like, cohesive to anything that came before it. And then the plot isn't this, like, it's just nothing about it feels like The Godfather. It's so odd. It's such just an odd film that, like, I don't know. It doesn't work. I don't.
Out of those movies, would you call it The Odd Father?
Good one. I don't really think I remember always thinking, like, oh, Sofia Coppola she ruined the movie, but she really didn't. Like, she's fine. I mean, again, like, I have more of a problem with her character and the movie in general, because it's a very ham-fisted way to, like, for Coppola to put himself in the movie. You know, it feels like that's what that movie is kind of about.
Yeah, she didn't go on to ruin movies
until she started directing. Yeah, just to be clear, I don't care for her as a director at all. But I don't think I think she got a lot of, like, undue hate for her as an actress. Like, I think, like, the movie is bad. I don't necessarily think it's bad because of her. But anyway, that's all. So let's get in. Oh, sorry, Sean, go ahead. You were saying something? I thought you said something. I guess not. All right. So what happened in Max and Mary, guys?
Max and Mary. So in Max and Mary, you're introduced to Mary Dinkle.
Pause real quick. Yeah. Sorry. I just want you to know that you are very important on this show, because without you, trying to do these synopsises is next to impossible. I struggled to try to get through the previous film that we watched. We all saw TJ struggling. You have a fucking ability that is hard to duplicate, never replicated. That's all. Just wanted to glaze you a little bit.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I think Huggo does a pretty good job, though.
You know, why didn't I just pull up the Huggo the synopsis?
So anyway, you're introduced to, I can't think of her last name. Here's the thing. I like this movie so much, I'm not going to make fun of it. So I'm going to give it a very straight review of this, or what goes down. Her name is, like, Mary Dinkle something or other. I forget what her name. She's an 8-year-old girl. She lives in Australia. She lives in, like, what is, not necessarily a broken home, but kind of a sad situation. Her mom's drunk on sherry all the time. Her dad works.
It's pretty close.
Her dad works at a teabag factory. She's sort of a social outcast. She has a birthmark on her forehead that looks like poop. She has eyes like muddy puddles. She lives across the street from a Greek fella who can't speak correctly. She doesn't have a lot of friends. She likes this show called The Nobles, I believe it's called. She can't afford the toys, so she makes them herself. So she's
out of food containers. Right. Like, yeah.
So, like, yeah. It's
she's her family is super poor. Her dad is he attaches strings to tea bags.
Yeah.
And also is an absentee father, because he basically just put it. It makes it seem like he is in his shed all day performing taxidermy while the mother is drunk off her ass at home.
Yeah, drinking sherry.
Stealing all the time, too. The mother is poor, so she's constantly shoplifting. It's not a great home life.
And right. Mary has a pet rooster.
Yeah, which is adorable. Also, the rooster lives for a very long time.
Yeah. And so Mary gets the idea. She just, like, I think they're at the library, right? And she gets a hand of a phone book, and she just finds a random name and address in a phone book. And for those of you children listening to this, back in the day, they used to publish entire books that had everyone's name and address in them.
It's the 70s, right? I think they give it
1976, I believe.
Yeah.
So she pulls his name out of this book, and it's Max, and now I can't think of Max's last name. He's a very Jewish name. He's a 44-year-old single Jewish man in New York City who you find out over the course of the movie has Asperger's, and they sort of explore all of his, like, sort of base. He's basically like Drax the Destroyer. Like, metaphor doesn't work for him. It's all very literal.
We lost
Life is confusing for him. He's had a series of jobs. He's overweight, but he has three goals in life. He wants a lifetime supply of chocolate. He wants a complete collection of also the Noblets, and he wants to make a friend. And we start with this sad premise, and then she basically sends him, she sends this letter kind of out of nowhere and says who she is and her whole bit and her life, and it just arrives, I think it's like 9 days and 7 hours later, it shows up in New York, and he reads it, and then he writes back, he types back like this whole letter about all about him, asks her a bunch of questions. And this back and forth between this 44-year-old
have you ever been a communist?
And the questions are, the movie is like charming and sad and heartwarming and heartbreaking, and the Max is voiced by the late great Philip Seymour Hoffman,
which made me much sadder once I realized that, because Philip Seymour Hoffman, like one of the goats, like such a great actor.
And Mary is voiced by the incomparable Toni Collette.
Is Australian, which I always forget because I don't think...
Really?
Yeah, she never plays an Aussie, but she is Australian.
I had no idea.
Also, apparently, just looking at the wiki, I did not know that... another Australian that you may know, but Toni Collette's eventual husband in the movie, that's Eric Bana.
No, the Greek guy across the street.
Yeah, that's Eric Bana, and I didn't know that. I literally just saw it in the wiki. I didn't know that's who that was. But he, again, another Aussie.
So, there's anyway. So this happens. So she sends a letter. Letter gets sent back. Her mother intercepts the letter from Max, and her mother is rightfully disturbed by the fact that a 44-year-old man from New York is writing her 8-year-old daughter. So she throws the letter away in the rubbish bin, as they do in Australia. And through basically fate, luck, happenstance,
this has a great joke where the mother runs out to the trash men who are literally like getting the trash into the truck, and they're like, "Do you have any time? You have time for another bag?" And he's like, "Yeah, get in the truck."
Yeah, that's a good one. The fucking binman.
This is this movie is genuinely funny too. Like, there's laugh out loud
moments.
Yeah. It's got everything.
So he goes and the letter falls out of the trash bin, and
what did you say, Sean? Did you sneeze? What was that? Yeah, I can hear you.
We can't hear you.
Okay. All right.
Do you have anything to say? You're just testing.
Just want to confirm.
Yeah, I just check
it. He wants to tell us what he watched this week.
I was trying to because I cut out for a second, but her dad's job at the fucking tea bag factory.
So funny.
The funniest part is the machine, like on the conveyor belt, is the tea bag and the tag, and he has to attach the string at both ends with like two button presses. I don't know, that shit made me laugh really hard.
No, it was goofy. it's such a menial, like a meaningless job, but I guess it's important and bizarrely not automated. Because he was hitting a button every time.
Two button presses.
So anyway, so I think her chicken finds the note and hands it to her, and then she reads it, and now Max has responded, and then she's like, "Oh shit, okay, I will write you back, but send the letters to my neighbor who doesn't have legs and has agoraphobia across the street."
No, so which she calls homophobia.
Because he's afraid to leave the house.
It's very loose house. But you learn all about
that killed me in the movie. I was like,
or later where she's like Max, he's still struggling to overcome his homophobia.
So like Max explains, like, you know, tells her to stand up for herself, and like she basically she makes some kid cry because she tells him he's never gonna go to heaven, and she learns about how humans are come from eggs that are laid by prostitutes or nuns or whatever else.
Yeah, at first she was told by her grandfather that babies were found at the bottom of beer glasses, which is very funny. Very alcoholic way to look at life.
So they trade this international pen pal thing happens. They trade chocolate and stories, And then she sends something back to Max. And then Max, it basically, these stories that she sends to Max cause Max to remember his own life and trigger, like, full-blown panic attacks. So the first time he has a panic attack, but he powers through at the same time. He has a panic attack so bad that he has to get into a psych ward for like 9 months. And she just figures.
Because she asks him about being in love and having like kids. I think having a family and yeah. That like really sets him off. Like, yeah.
So she thinks that's the end of that, I guess. And he, you know, 9 months later after electroshock therapy and everything, he comes back.
Can we briefly touch on this cutaway to the newspaper headline, which is fucking. And it takes
retarded like man wins fortune?
No, obese retarded man craned out. And it's just a picture of him with a fucking stretcher on a crane.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make note of it several times that Max is extremely overweight and he eats what he calls chocolate hot dogs, which is just
it's a chocolate bar in a hot dog bun.
You ever had a chocolate hot dog? I invented it.
Yeah.
The movie is so charming about like
I fucking love and this like movie.
He's like six. So I think good. He's 300 and he's 44 years old, 340 pounds, and as tall as a 6 foot tree.
what is his like Weight Watchers group called? It's like
Overeaters Anonymous. And there's a woman who kisses him all the time without his permission, and it makes him uncomfortable. Philip Seymour Hoffman is so good in this role.
He's so fucking good. What a shame.
Anyway.
This might be close to one of his last roles, right? Because he passed not long after this.
I don't know if you guys touched on this or not, but I've seen this thumbnail for this movie a billion times. I think Alec mentioned he saw it before. But I thought this was just going to be some kind of like goth Tim Burton knockoff just by looking at the box, and it's not that at all.
Not at all. Well, especially with like the color palette and kind of like askew characters the way they kind of are. But yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So he goes.
This makes Tim Burton look like a real piece of shit.
It's more like Tim Bitchton.
More like Tim Turden.
Or just.
All right,
or like
Tim Burton.
Jizz Burton.
Pissed Burton. Anyway, so now so Max has a full blown panic attack. But he gets back, he writes to her, and they keep writing back and forth. And like time progresses and things advance, and she tells him about the kid across the street, and he tells her all about his life and how he's been how he got diagnosed with Asperger's and what that's like for him and how he's looking at it like a positive thing, like Aspie's for freedom and this, that, and the other. And then she's like, I want to devote my life into helping people with Asperger's. And then she basically like time passes. She grows up. She turns a corner. She goes to like, actually strike that. Her father finally retires from the tea bag attaching school building, whatever it is, and then he decides to take up metal detecting at the beach, and then I guess a tsunami or a fucking a tidal wave annihilates him and he dies, which is sad. And then he gets
all they have is his metal detector. They bury his metal detector.
Yeah, so he leaves his money to Mary. Mary goes to university, and Papadopoulos, the stuttering Greek neighbor across the street's there as well, Eric Bana's character.
Well, they also make a point when they get married to say that he made her wedding dress, so they kind of softball it in for you in case you didn't
know. She's there to study neurology, and he's there to study theater. Meanwhile, her mom, so she goes to university, learns all this stuff. Her mom, who is saddened by the loss of her husband, is in his embalming shed, and instead of drinking cooking sherry, manages to drink embalming fluid.
Yeah.
Now she's also dead, right? So as Mary's studying for her doctorate in psychology, right, she's married Max. She's, you know,
well, she not, didn't she marry Max.
She married the neighbor. She's grown up. Things are kind of going good for Mary at this point. She's going to get her doctorate. She's about to be published. It's about to be published with a study of Asperger's, which is really a study of Max. And she thinks this is going to be a good thing because she was trying to help Max. And she sends him a copy of the book and says, you know, look what I've done for you. And then Max, who is, you know, this is an interesting point in the movie, right? Just from a social perspective, right? Because you have someone, it illustrates the whole road to hell is paved with best intentions. Like Mary wants to help her friend and is doing this with the best intentions. But Max is happy with being Max. He may not like every bit of it, but he's accepted who he is and sees the fact that she's trying to cure that as an insult. So then he basically breaks off the relationship. He can't even express how angry he is. He just sends her the letter M from his typewriter because he can't
he rips out stand of his typewriter.
Gods, did you touch on him winning the lottery?
Oh, yeah.
That has happened.
Yeah, that's already happened.
I'm sorry. So she was saving up money to go visit him, and then I apologize. I skipped that part. Max plays the same numbers in the New York City lottery every week, and he finally hits them. And so presumably he makes hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And he uses that money to do three things. He buys a lifetime supply of chocolate, which he keeps in a storage unit. He buys all of the
wheelbarrows back and forth.
Yeah. He buys all of the noblets.
I don't know if you touched on this, but the noblets are dicks. They are like dick action figures.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I did not. That did not.
You didn't notice. I forgot to mention it, but you did not notice that the fact that they have a fucking bell end on top of its head.
And they're called the noblets.
No, I went over my head completely. For real.
Oh, shit.
So he bought all the noblets, and they didn't know what to do with the rest of the money. So the neighbor that lives across the hall from him, this blind woman that sort of takes care of him and feeds him, he gave all the rest of the money to Ivy. And then Ivy blew it on a whole bunch of nonsense and then died and then gave it to a cat hospital. But then the guy ran off with that.
God, I feel like it's important to note that she died in a jetpack mishap.
Yeah.
She died hilariously. Also, there's a running gag in the movie where Max keeps getting and killing goldfish, and he has Henrys that it's like Snowball 1, 2, 3. It's like from The Simpsons. Like it's just he keeps getting new Henrys, and they keep dying. He captures flies for them, and he puts them in bottles. He collects all of his toenails from every year. Like he's a creature of very extreme habit.
The letter he writes to Mary finally, where it's like, not much has happened to me besides my man's on a trial and winning lottery.
That's right. His air conditioner falls out of his. He kills a mime with an air conditioner that falls out of his window, or it falls out of his wall, and then smashes this mime to death. Right, he gets acquitted because he's not mentally sound to have committed manslaughter. And he's got the newspapers on his wall. He's got three of them. It's local man acquitted of manslaughter. Retarded man wins lottery, and then. Woman donates fortune to cat hospital, but then the cat hospital people just buy fake boobs and run off without it. But Max is content. Max has done 2 out of 3 goals. He got a lifetime supply of chocolate. He bought all the noblets, and the friend thing's the last thing. That's Mary. And Mary's happy to hear about this.
I hate to keep interrupting, but I love somebody who touches this movie. I was texting TJ. It's so darkly hilarious that he has an imaginary friend that's like too bored with him to do anything but read and then leaves. Yeah.
And his name was
Dr. Mr. Ravioli.
Yeah, Mr. Ravioli. Mr. Ravioli. Dr. Ravioli.
Yeah, he's reading self-help books, and then he splits.
Yeah. So Mary writes this book. She sends it to Max. Max gets upset. He sends the letter. He doesn't even send anything else back besides the one little hammer for the thing. And then that sends Mary off into a spiral. She's depressed. She's sad. Her husband leaves her to go have an affair with his pen pal, a goat herder in New Zealand. Mary starts drinking sherry, and then she goes in this incredibly dark place where she's about to kill herself.
She's hanging. And like while she has this big musical number killing herself, they show that she's pregnant at the same time because the movie couldn't be more fucking sad.
Right.
But the whole time where they show her getting more and more depressed and sadder and sadder. She's going out every day checking for a letter.
Yeah.
That's never there. And then a letter does show up and it's her husband telling her that he's leaving her for a sheep herder in New Zealand.
Yeah. And then, so then this is where the movie takes sort of a heroic turn and sort of a like, but then it ends bittersweet, but her neighbor gets over his homophobia and wheelchairs himself across the street, basically breaks into the situation where she's about to end her life to give her a package that Max has sent with all the noblets. And, well, so anyway, so Max comes to the realization that, you know what, Mary's the closest thing he's ever, Mary was his friend and she was trying to do the right thing. No one's perfect. He's not perfect. And he should make amends. And so he does. It saves Mary's life. And she travels to New York with her baby to finally meet Max. And she shows up at his apartment. Art. And she walks in and Max, and now it's been like 20 years. So at this point, Max is in his mid to late 60s, right? And so Max has just died that morning. And he's sitting there on his couch, like staring up at the ceiling. And Mary shows up with her baby. And it's sad. And then she like follows his eyes up and it's got all of her letters that he has ironed and laminated. And well, first of all, she follows his eyes up to the mirror, which has a picture of the hand-drawn picture of Mary she gave him first. And she continues to look up. And it's all the letters that she ever sent him on his ceiling. That's what he died looking at. And it was.
Well,
okay.
I think she also sees that he kept the bottle of her tears.
Yeah.
That she sent him because he couldn't cry. So she sent him, she made herself sad, thinking of her cat getting run over by a car.
Right.
So she could cry, to send him a bottle of her tears so he could have his own tears to cry.
Yeah, I thought that was really sweet. Also,
yeah.
I really like this shot of her seeing all the letters because it's one of these things. They use the medium so well of the stop motion animation because the way they frame it, it looks like it goes on infinitely.
You know what I mean? Star Wars crawl. Like
and I love that. Yeah. Like I thought that was such a great use of. I mean, the whole movie looks great. Like they do a great job with the animation. But I think like that's one of those unique things where like you kind of can only do that in this kind of format. And I thought it was really, really well done.
And it's a great reveal because even though you spend like half the movie in that apartment, you never see him go up there. You never, you know what I mean?
Right.
It never pans that way.
Yeah, I agree.
So, like, you know, he saves the letters. Like he says he irons it and he laminates them. You see him reading in bed so he doesn't get like what's on him. She's writing them on like old butcher paper that had like pork chops on them and stuff. Right.
Yeah, because again, she is very, very poor. Like, they don't,
yeah. But and then just ends on this just like impossibly bittersweet note.
Oh, I want to before we leave this scene. So he with his Asperger's and all, like he has a hard time, like he doesn't know what to do with his face to show his emotions. So like he has this little book to like train him on like emotions.
Well, he also doesn't know how to read other people's faces. He has to look at the book to be like, are they mad or not?
So I liked how he had that book on him and he died with a huge like smile on his face. Like, I don't know. It's incredibly sweet and like a fun, like a nice little touch. Like I thought that was really sweet. I liked like that a lot.
Yeah. And like his whole, like one of the things about Max is he's like, I think he wears a yarmulke even though he doesn't believe in God. He's not a practicing Jewish person, but it keeps his head warm and he likes it. It's comfortable.
Yeah. She gives
him a pom pom for it. And like,
I like how his character design, like the top of his head is like a God. It's like a hill. I almost said horn, but it's
pronounced.
Kind of, yeah, and it's like sticks out, so it's like perfect the way that they created the character. Like I loved how like because at first when you see it, like I thought it was just supposed to be represent like his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, I love how his atheism comes in where he's like, you know, you can pretend like you're going to be in charge of the chocolate in heaven. I would like to, but I cannot because of my atheism.
Because of my atheism.
I love that's like his personality where he always does that, where he always has to kind of button things up in like a very logical way.
I laugh so fucking hard and I don't want to give it away. And I know I don't want to belabor the point, Is Alex sick of me by now? But fucking, there's this scene where he's talking about in the army, and they're like, they asked me if I was a member of any radical organizations, and I said I was a member of the New York Science Fiction Fan Club. They said that didn't count, but they kicked me out anyway. I'm glad I forgot to mention that I was a member of the Communist Party. Have you ever been a communist? Also, have you ever been attacked by a crow?
It's so, like, this movie's, it's, I don't know. It's beautiful, and it has a brilliant. I didn't mention this before, and I'd like to talk about it a little bit. It has like a brilliant use of color, because most of the time the movie's in like black and white and kind of gray tones, and it like there's well, like little bits of color that go ahead.
Everything Max does is in black and white, and then everything she does, everything in Australia is in like sepia.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh,
it's like
pick up on that.
Yeah. It's not quite black and white. It's got that like orangish yellowish tint to it, like old.
Yeah, like sepia tone.
Yeah.
And she has her mood ring. What is her mood ring? When it's gray, it means like three very different things. It's like she's got ambition or she's bored. It's like right.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot. I mean, I can just sit here for another 30 minutes and just talk about how much I enjoyed this. So, I mean, it brought me to tears at the end because I'm a sap, but
you know, it's very, like, I thought, I mean, that's justified. I think it's a very sad movie, you know, I don't in a good way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, all right. And Alec, let's see. Was your favorite part of the movie the chicken poop? That kind of propelled the entire plot, if you really think about it.
No, my favorite part of the movie was the two dogs that are humping.
Okay.
And the agoraphobia guy is like trying to like yank their chain to get them to stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Won't.
Yeah. Also, I like.
And then she says, she sees it, and I forget what she says. Is it something about them like dancing or something? I wish my pets dance.
I wish I could have somebody to play piggy, or I could piggyback with somebody or something like that.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's great.
What were the three words that he invented? It was confuzzled, which is confused and puzzled. It was almost like shit dirt or like snow dirt, snert.
I can't, yeah, snert, yeah.
And the last one was squashables.
Squashables. The groceries at the bottom of the bag that get like all fucked
up. Here are a list of my three of my five favorite words. Vladivostok. Like, it was so, like, I don't know, man. Philip Seymour Hoffman's, both their performances though, but his performance is so charming. I can't get over it.
It's such a shame he liked heroin more than entertaining me, because I'm pretty sad about it.
Oh. Yeah.
Also, he lasted it. This, if this came out, he died in 2014, so he had a few years after this.
Yeah.
All right. Do we want to do
also? What a wild career for that guy, because he was Dusty in Twister.
I mean, he was also the dude in fucking Boogie Nights.
Yeah, he was
right. Stupid.
One of the saddest scenes ever. Yeah. He's so good in that movie, though. I mean, he's good. Yeah. Like, name a bad Philip Seymour Hoffman performance.
You got a girlfriend?
What's that movie with Ben Stiller?
Which one?
Goddamn. This is
Long Came Polly?
Oh, he's maybe? In
that? Yeah, that movie sucks.
Yeah, he sucks in that.
Philip Seymour Hoffman has one of my all-time favorite lines in any movie, in The Talented Mr. Ripley. He looks at Matt Damon and he goes, "Don't you want to fuck every woman you meet just once?"
Yeah. That movie rocks. I love him in Happiness, where he plays like the weird, like obsessive neighbor to. To what's her name, Laura from Boyle. I love that movie. That's a movie.
I mean, I understand that.
We should watch that movie on the Todd Solondz month. Oh my god. There's a legit pedophile in that movie, and he's not necessarily put in the worst light. It's a very strange film. All right, five knuckle shuffle time. Alec, the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour, twice as nice so you don't need it once. That didn't work.
This is gonna get a 10 from me.
Yeah, dog, 100%.
I don't particularly care for stop motion as like a medium. But if I am gonna,
this is gonna be a tough month.
If I am gonna see,
this is impressive though. It's like him liking a Western. Like if it got past that,
I am gonna see stop motion. I want it to be something like this, not some silly kids movie. Like something with some teeth to it.
We can all agree to that.
That really gets you good. This movie fucking slaps. Like everybody's so good in it. The animation is tremendous. I absolutely love the music in it. Like the little, I don't even know how you describe it. The fluttery, uplifting music every time something good goes good for her. It starts to go good. I love this movie. I'm glad I picked this and not Paranorman like I was going to.
Oh yeah. I'm glad you picked it too.
TJ.
It's also a 10 for me, dog. This movie is fantastic. It's funny, it's creative. It looks great. Like I love the visual style of this movie. Like it's very different. Like I can't really think of another animated thing. Like this is definitely this guy's vision, right? And I think the thing that's most impressive to me about it is that it is able to be very emotionally honest and affecting, but it's still really silly. Like the jokes, again, like the noblets are dicks. A lot of the humor is very crass and silly, but then at the underneath of it all, it's this very human story about connection and alienation. And you know, I thought it was really, really, really well done. And it's so hard. I mean, we've talked about this with other films, but when you can strike a balance that are two things that are so incongruent, right? Like, I feel like on the surface, if you looked at this story and what it's trying to say, you would think this is a very serious kind of, you know, if you didn't know it was animated or whatever, but you'd think this is a very serious, kind of sad movie, but it's really not.
I think even animated, if you just read, the plot for this or a synopsis, you're like, man, that's fucking depressing.
Yeah, exactly. But I loved it. I thought this was great. I mean, I really did. I really loved everything about it. I will search out the rest of it. This guy has three other movies. I'd like to see them all now because I thought this was great. I really loved it and I thought it was really touching. And it's, like I said, it's very emotionally effective. And it doesn't feel, you know, a lot of times with movies that are kind of overly sad or whatever, it feels manipulative, but everything in this feels earned and genuine. And I thought it was really, really well done. Also, before I yield my time, a very nuanced way. And again, in a very silly movie to address mental health problems. I feel like his Asperger's, is while it's part of his character and his character is funny, I don't think it's making fun of people with Asperger. You know what I mean? And in fact, his whole rejection of her book and getting upset, that plot beat alone is a very mature thing to put in your movie. And I don't know. I give it a lot of credit. I think it's a very different movie and a very well-made film. And something that I think, definitely rises above, it's a shame more people aren't going to watch this because of the medium that it's in. Again, stop motion. Like we said before the show or during the beginning of the show, if I saw this, you know, if scrolling past Netflix, there's no way I would have watched it. I would have never given it a time of day. And it's a shame, because it's great. It's really, really good. So, yeah, it's a 10 for me, dog. It's phenomenal. Sean.
Yeah, it's a 10 for me. I think this is one of the best movies we've actually watched, full stop.
Yeah, I agree.
It's everybody, I'm sure, sick of me saying just animate everything at this point. But there's so much you can do with the medium. And it's weird, right? Because this movie set up a stage play. It's just people narrating letters back and forth almost entirely.
I'm glad you brought that up because the narration goes out through the whole movie. And I was worried. Because it's almost like a fairy tale narrator, right? He narrates through the whole thing. And I was like, uh-oh, is this going to be you know what I mean? how's this going to play out? But it right. works.
But there's almost no actual dialogue. It's all just the reading of letters, which if it was just people sitting in a room somewhere, it would be boring as shit. But when you add like how quirky the animation is and just some of the, like, I know I said the communist line, but just all the shit he says is so, you know, they flick their cigarette butts in the water and that becomes bad because then the fish get hooked on nicotine. Of course, I'm kidding. You cannot keep a cigarette lit underwater, you know, shit like that. Like every joke is perfect. It goes on just as long as it needs to. It's all within character. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's perfect. Like the fucking bird taxidermy where they're like, they've got the X's on the eyes. Like it's all in cartoon language, but it's still like a very sweet and maudlin movie. And it's sad without being like twee. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, I'm sure somebody mentioned it just about the setup. Like any other movie about a 40-year-old having a pen pal relationship with a child is like, this is weird. I don't like it, but like, you get it. It works. You know what I mean? I don't know. This movie yeah. works.
And there's nothing at all creepy about their relationship, like at all. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's never any.
Yeah. It's very wholesome. And like, this is going to be a strange point of comparison, but it's like Mulholland Drive. It's a movie that should not work at all, but works perfectly. And I don't think anything else could. And, you know, you couldn't tell the story any other way than how it is. So, yeah, that's it for me. This is, like I said, this is one of the best movies. Good job, Alec. This is like one of the best movies we've watched in 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
Gobbles.
It's a perfect score. It's 10. It's 10s across the board. It's... I
just like Ninja 2 Shadow of a Deer.
Like I'm gonna echo everything everybody else said, but never in a million years would I have watched this on my own. There's no, like, it could have been the last thing available at the end of the internet to watch, and I probably would have gone and jerked off instead. Like there was not a chance now. And I am so happy that I got to watch this. It took me through like an emotional journey. It's beautiful. It is unlike any movie I've ever seen. The fact that it's done with stop motion, I think, honestly, it's such an interesting, like if you saw Philip Seymour Hoffman sitting there acting this out and you saw, I guess, a child acting it on the other side, there's something about that, like that. What's the word I'm looking for here? That contrast of like what we're talking about and like sort of how heavy and how dark and how mature the subject matter is up against this sort of childlike, wondrous presentation that just makes it just nuts.
And shout out to Toni Collette, if nobody mentioned it before, because she's a gem in everything.
Yeah, like
she does a great job.
Also, shout out to Dr. Bernarda Hassel, who gets name checked in this movie about a trillion times. And there's this line that I really loved. I had to look it up. It was, Dr. Bernard Hasselhoff said, if I was on a desert island, then I would have to get used to my own company, just me and the coconuts. He said, I would have to accept myself, my warts and all, and we don't get to choose our warts. They're part of us and we live with them. We can, however, choose our friend, and I'm glad I've chosen you. And that broke me. I was like, that is... the fucking also sweetest line.
When he visualizes himself on this island, he is nude.
There's a mirror on a palm tree.
Yeah.
No, this movie is, thank you, Alec. This is something special. Like, this is a really, this is awesome.
So. Christmas came early this year. Care of Alec.
Yep. There we go.
All right. Who wants to go next week?
I've got one of two choices, but they're both Wes Anderson movies.
I also have
I've got one, and I think it would bring the whole room down. Like nothing's gonna top this, so it's gonna be tough.
Yeah. You know? All right. Well, who wants to go? I also, like, we all have picks.
Doesn't matter.
I'll go. Fuck it. I changed my mind. I'm not doing that Tom Thumb movie. I watched about 10 minutes of it. I was like, yeah, this is boring. We're going Coraline. Fuck it.
Oh, hell yeah. I've never seen that.
Making up a song about Coraline.
Yeah, Coraline. We're watching Coraline. I wanted to watch.
Never seen it.
I've never seen.
Oh wow, you're in for a treat.
That's shocking.
I don't think it's gonna live up to this, like Sean just said, but I do think. I mean, I have seen it and I really like it, so yeah. I think it'll. It's not gonna live up to this, but I think it's a strong film. You're not gonna hate it. If you hate it, I'm gonna be shocked.
Right. No, I think everybody will. Well, Gog's the only one that hasn't seen it, but I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. And I think there's a lot to talk about. I think it's an interesting, interesting movie. So
it also might be Neil Gaiman's best work.
Hey, eat shit, Sandman.
I mean, this is the guy that wrote Sandman. I don't know. That's a crazy thing.
I don't know. Have you seen Sandman? But
seen? Oh, the show. Yeah. I watched the whole thing. Are you kidding? All right. That's the show.
We'll
see you all next.
RIP. Rest in peace, the real one. Yeah.
Very sad. That dude was awesome. Also, I kind of thought he was already dead. I got to be honest. I didn't.
Was he like, would you say he's the most iconic American actor voice of all time?
Voice? Besides Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. I mean, probably. I mean, like, that's the voice, right? Like, he, that's, you know, right. What I mean?
It's,
like,
well, it's like him and Morgan Freeman. Like,
I'd give the edge to James Earl Jones.
Agreed.
James Earl Jones hasn't done a ton of voice work. You know what I mean? He did, like, the...
But just, I mean, like, his voice is just...
Oh,
like,
he did
Verizon commercials?
He did Mustafa.
Yeah, fair.
Vader.
He did This Is CNN.
He was the voice of CNN. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Well, and also, like, he was a good actor, like, outside of voice acting work. He was in a lot
of watch movies. The Great White Hope. That shit rules.
It's a good movie, yeah. He was good.
Go watch Field of Dreams again. That movie fucking rules too.
Yeah, he was in
baseball,
a lot of
Ray.
Baseball.
Anyway, that's the show. And fucking Conan. Gogs, how did you not mention Conan?
Good point. Yeah, dude, him is the bad guy.
Tulsa Doom or whatever.
Tulsa Doom is like,
I love that.
What a G role he plays in that. Like, he's an absolute fucking snake face of a monster. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, Conan fucking rocks. All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Glad I built.
See you guys.